Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Welcome to episode 18 of Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman.
And I'm Amy Masson.
I'm Tracy Epps.
Our guest today is Tess Coughlin Allen. Tess is super active in the WordPress community. She's organized the first Do Action hackathon to take place in Europe and is one of the global leads for WordCamp Europe 2020. In her day job, she works at marketing manager for Mindoodle. Welcome, Tess.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
We like to start off each of our episodes by asking our guests to tell us about their journey into WordPress. How did you get started?
Yeah, sure. So I worked a few years ago for an organization that had like two sister brands within it. And one half was like a med tech network, which did lots of events and had a bunch of different websites that were WordPress sites that needed managing. So I was like content creator, marketer, communications specialist for them. And then on the sister brand, we all worked in the same lovely open plan office, so back and forth all the time. But in the sister brand was a design and communications agency. And they started off specializing in print and then gradually moved to specializing in WordPress, which actually is probably quite common, I suppose. And so I was a copywriter for them. So I was kind of doing two things. On one side, I was the classic WordPress user as like a content manager who, you know, wasn't particularly technical. And then on the other side, I was involved in the development process in a sense, because I was creating content for clients as well. So I got to see it from two different perspectives. And I absolutely loved WordPress. It's just so easy for someone like me who the reason I want to use it is to share content. So it was brilliant to use. And then I moved city in 2016. And so I'd been using WordPress for like 2.5 years or something. And I moved city, then moved job. My new job was with my team at Mindoodle, who I work with now. And I was talking to them when I just started, and they were going on about the WordPress community. And I was thinking, what are you talking about? I've been using WordPress for a couple of years, but I've certainly never heard of this sort of community. And they were like, yeah, we actually go all over the world, like going to WordCamps. And we've just heard there's going to be a WordCamp in our local area, so in Bristol in the UK. So we're going to go and chat to the organizers and get more involved with our local community. So I went along, you know, fresh into the job, and was totally like blown away by what happens and how it's completely like community led. And I offered my help with stuff I found easy, which was social media and content writing. So I did that for the inaugural WordCamp Bristol. And then from there, I just got more and more involved naturally. So I got asked to get involved with the local meetup, so the monthly meetup, and I started organizing that. I did that for a year. I co-organized the first Do Action Day to take place in Europe, which was really gratifying because it just put a different spin on what we were doing and why. And we can talk a bit more about that later, I suppose. And then took the jump to start helping out with WordCamp Europe. So I started that 2018 in the PR team, which is a little sub team within the wider organizing team. Then 2019, I was team lead for communications. And now for 2020, I'm one of three global leads. So it's been a really nice sort of journey to go on, and all thanks to WordPress.
So what does a global lead do?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's kind of changing for 2020. So if you think about, if you know of a local WordCamp, there's always a lead organizer who's ultimately responsible. And in WordCamp Europe, it's been no different. There's always been a global lead who's the person who makes the final decisions. I mean, we've got mentors as well and people we can ask and talk to if we're concerned about anything. But the global lead manages the number of team leads, like communications, which I was part of, or sponsors or whatever. And then there's a local lead, because WordCamp Europe happens in a different city every year, a different European city, much like WordCamp US, but WordCamp US is every 2 years in a different city in the US. So there's a local lead who brings the local knowledge about where we're going. And that's been the way it's been working as the event has grown. And now it's got to the point where it's quite so big that one person being the ultimate point of responsibility is firstly a lot of pressure and a lonely job. But secondly, I mean, what happens if they get unwell? What if they, for some reason, they can't do their duties? And so this year we chatted to actually some of the other people who organize WordCamps, including people from WordCamp US, and found out what worked about them having multiple global leads. And so this year being next year, I'm already thinking about 2020. Next year, we've got three global leads so that we can split some of the responsibility, both in terms of, you know, sharing the load, because it's a big weight to carry, but also because we've got different skills. So for example, Bernard, who is another of the global leads, he's going to probably be focusing on like logistics. And then Jonas, the other global lead, will be thinking about the budget and he's, you know, organizing all the finances. And then my role is totally communications. So we see those as like the three kind of pillars of what it takes to run WordCamp Europe. There's a few other sub teams that we haven't quite figured out where they'd fit yet, really important ones as well. So we've got some work to do. But I mean, any one of us could probably have been global lead, but we can do it so much better together. So that's the idea for 2020.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Just to think of that, because that is the largest WordCamp. Like, that is.
Yeah. It's a lot of responsibility on one pair of shoulders.
Huge. Yeah.
There's a saying in the running world, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think that really applies here.
I like it. Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah. Also, I mean, this is so irrelevant, really, but I am a twin and I've got two older brothers and we've always been a four, or I've been in a two, and I haven't had to have like that many sort of experiences totally on my own. I've always been in teams. And actually the idea of being at this stage in my career, the person who's solely responsible for making sure all the rest of the teams are working well and everyone's happy and all the attendees are happy and the sponsors and everything, that is a lot of pressure. So I personally feel much more comfortable working in a team instead of being that point at the top of the pyramid, which I think is a bit unhealthy, especially in a community-led event like WordCamp Europe.
So I agree completely. So you're focusing on the communication stuff. So how do you curate that? Because that's a huge message. It's a lot of people. What kind of strategy do you have with the, you know, running the communications and leading that part of such a big conference and conference of that?
One of the best things we implemented for 2019 from a communications perspective was we prepared a roadmap and made that public. So we, all of the teams that we have, and we split like with, I think, 10 teams. So like I said, sponsors, communications, content, which is like speakers and workshops, things like that, attendee services, things like that. So for each of those teams, as communications team lead for 2019, I said, you've got to give me the dates, the big dates in the calendar, so we can not only plan our communication strategy, but also we can make people aware of when stuff's coming, because often there's quite a small window. For example, with call for speakers, you know, people could easily miss that if they're busy, if they're taking some time away from social media, or, you know, they're traveling. You know, we don't want people to miss out on the opportunity just because we haven't made people aware of when the call opens and closes. So for 2019, we set out a roadmap. We didn't include every single date we could have included. We added to it as more dates and deadlines became set in stone, but we didn't deviate from most of it whatsoever. I think maybe one or two, we changed by one or two days. Can't remember the specifics. Perhaps it was like a print deadline or something for t-shirts, that sort of thing. But that, like I say, that sort of organization at the very beginning made it so much easier to start planning a strategy for the communications. And then also with the communications team, I gave everyone in my team other teams to bridge with, because we ultimately are involved with everything. So they would be encouraged to, if they wanted to, sit in on a meeting, but more importantly, like follow what's going on Slack. Don't be afraid to reach out and say, look, I'm your bridge from the comms team. You need to tell me exactly what's going on so that I can make sure we amplify the messages at the right time. And also the purpose of that was to protect other teams as well. So we've, as the comms team, we rely on the design team so that we've got social media images ready, blah, blah, blah. And I don't want people getting asked too much at the end of the evening. You know, we've got this to go out tomorrow morning, and I'm trying to, in some ways, protect every member of all of the teams so that we don't burn out, because that's the biggest risk in a community-led event like this, where people sometimes just give their all, and that's amazing. But if you don't put some things in place, some structure in place, that passion and enthusiasm will lead to someone having to, someone going over the top and needing to take some time out, which I definitely can relate to. So, you know, that's why I put structures in place. In terms of strategy, I suppose we started off with a calendar of some sorts, and then there could be some deviation from that because you've kind of made room for that deviation.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. I saw that timeline and I was like, this is such a great idea because it was like all laid out there, visual, so like I could plan ahead. And that that was so great. And now I thought I saw WordCamp US also did that this year or something. I saw it somewhere else and I was like, this is such a great idea. Like, I hope more follow suit because there's always that like, okay, well, I submitted my talk, but now I can't find anywhere on the website where it says when those are going to be decided. Because like, they'll be in separate posts and you have to search through the site instead of just having one place for that. I think that's such a great idea. And I really thought, I had kind of, I was a terrible volunteer, but I volunteered for like a hot second with the photography because I hadn't heard back from the photography team in time for me to be able to like pack all of my camera gear. And like, it turns out that I did get an email, but it got stuck in my spam folder, you know? So it was one of those things where I was like, if I would have had that, you know, if I would have actually paid attention to that timeline, I could have printed it out and actually had that and see like, you know, checked back, be like, hey, I haven't heard back. But I did for the, you know, little bit that I was volunteering with not a camera, but just my iPhone and some lenses, which they were such a well-oiled team. Like I got to, you know, add like a little bit. And then I was like, y'all have this down. It was a well-oiled machine, and working with the comms team, I thought was just so great because like everything was like, all right, go get some photos. There's people there. Then putting that up on social media while the speaker is talking, we have a photo of the person talking just minutes ago. Like that was so like beautiful to see that.
This was an experiment as well. And actually, I should mention, although big flagship events like WordCamp Europe, we might seem like we're coming up with all this innovative stuff. And sometimes that's the truth. But sometimes we're taking from the community, from local WordCamps, great ideas, and we're putting them on a big stage. So I'll give you two examples. Firstly, the roadmap. I can't remember which WordCamp it came from, but it was one of the Serbian WordCamps. We were like, look, this has worked really well. Let's see if we can do this to a bigger audience and see if we can do it properly and everything. And then also the local WordCamp, again, Bristol, the local WordCamp to me, I saw them doing, getting such high quality, beautiful photos from their photographers for speakers. I'm publishing them, I think, just after the talks had finished. And I was like, oh, isn't that great? I really want to see if we can experiment and make that happen. Because, I mean, I, for one, I love taking photos, but I've got, you know, my equipment's not that good. And I was thinking of all the other people in the comms team who might have, like, I mean, I have a work phone and a personal phone. The personal phone's really blurry and the work phone has some sort of oil spot on the camera. And I was like, I can't ask people to take amazing high quality photos on their phones if I can't. So I wanted to experiment and see if we could get high quality professional like shots from the photography team out within the time that the talk was going on and do that for six concurrent streams. So it took a bit of really some kind of like group brainstorming to see how we could do it. And there was a few different strategies we came up with. And finally, the one that we, when we'd all talked about it and shared our opinions, that the one that we all agreed on worked so well. I'm so proud. But it's a good example of how like local ideas can be shown on a global stage.
Yeah, it was really great. Like, it was basically, you had someone in the, like, we should probably explain, because if someone else wants to steal this idea, borrow it, use it as well. Like, you know, there was someone live tweeting in the rooms, and they had a card reader.
Mm-hmm.
Like, simple.
And then the photographer from the photography team would hand over their SD card. They'd probably identify the best photo or a couple of photos to choose from. And then that photo would go up live during, and that would always happen probably within about 20 minutes. So, and often like quite early on, which was just, it was just awesome to watch. Because also I wasn't in the talks. I was at, up in the comms room on my laptop, like, this is going so well, watching from afar.
So I imagine, I mean, this requires tools to manage. So what are your favorite project management tools? What applications, software, what do you find that you use to communicate with each other other than Slack?
For WordCamp Europe?
Yeah.
So for WordCamp Europe, honestly, during the event, we just relied on Slack, a couple of Google Docs, and like Google Drive, and then Twitter. And tried to keep it like as simple as possible during the live event, because, you know, the more distractions, the higher the chance that people aren't going to manage to deliver. But to plan the tweets, or to schedule out the tweets before the live event, we use TweetDeck as well. Although it's a bit buggy, it's the free sort of Twitter scheduler. So we use that as well. But if I was going to be like for my own personal stuff, I'd always use MindDoodle because there's this mixture of like creative project management and like agile task management. So for me, that it just works. And obviously I know exactly how to use it because it's the brand I work for. But so in like day-to-day stuff, not WordCamp Europe stuff, I would definitely use that. But then WordCamp Europe as well. I think they,
like in terms of scheduling and plan, like all that advanced planning, like
the photography team also used WhatsApp a bit. And I was like, I have to download this. I don't understand this, but yeah, that worked out pretty well for like, hey, we're in this room or in that room, like the, as it goes. But the, since it's a good segue of like, MindDoodle, what you do. Well, tell us a little bit about what that all has and entails.
So MindDoodle is a product, and it's like a creative productivity tool, essentially. So it starts off with creative thinking techniques like mind mapping, and then you delve into each of the ideas in that mind map to add notes and media and tasks. And then connected with the mind map is a task management board. So you can work through the stages of progress and set the amount of time you think it's going to take. You can assign it to someone in your team, and then you can discuss the progress as well. So it's kind of this sort of seamless workspace for creativity and productivity. But then we've also, the exciting thing is we've also just released our first plugin for WordPress. So we use some of the key benefits of MindDoodle and turn them into a WordPress-specific tool. So the visual element of mind mapping is transformed into visual sitemaps. So you can see the structure of your site, you can interact with it and change the hierarchy of pages, or build a new site using it. And all, you know, it's not just a graphical tool. Everything you do, if you change the hierarchy, like the page hierarchy, it will actually work. So it's kind of this really interesting, like, visual time-saving sitemap tool. And then built into that again is task management. So It follows like agile methodology, but you could take it how you want it. And you can add tasks to every page within WordPress. So you can do all of that in WordPress. And then if you work with a client who you'd prefer to be away from the back end for whatever reason, they can use minddoodle.com and you can work simultaneously on both. It's totally collaborative. So it's got a number of different sort of benefits for WordPress development.
I love it. As a visual person, that's like so great.
The second we get off this interview, I'm going to be like checking
out. Yeah, maybe.
That's so awesome. So leading up to the WordCamp Europe as a global lead, I guess maybe that was part of my question, is like, what tools do you use with all these groups and all these teams and everything just to know, you know, keep on top of your deadlines and your task list? Is every team picking their own tools, or do you have a tool across the board that you're all kind of tuning into?
So every team is free to like introduce some more tools, but commonly used are like Trello, Slack, Google Drive. In fact, I think Google Drive is the most useful from my perspective when it comes to the writing, collaborative writing features, because we do a lot of, in the comms team, and I think other teams like PR, there'll be a lot of feedback and suggested edits, and it's just really easy to track those. We use Zoom. So every team that does video calls would use Zoom. And then some of the like sub-teams like volunteers would use other specific tools for assigning like volunteer roles. So I think, I can't remember what it's called, but there's like this tool for Find My Shift or something like that. And then again, like the other teams will delve into different tools. Like there's like a data tables tool, which I can't remember the name of either. I'm not in all the teams. So yeah,
it's just so fun. I'm going to put these all in the show notes, and it's just so fun to have a list of things from experienced event organizers who maybe haven't considered specific tools for how they're managing some things. So if you do think of that name, or
yeah, you know, do you know what? After this, we've got a bunch of handbooks, so I'll look through them, and we've all got tool lists in every team, so I will find them and share them with you.
Yeah. We love to share all those resources with people. That's so awesome. You mentioned in your, when you wrote to us about how, I thought this was so interesting, where you said that, that it took you a while to see how your skills were valuable and you were not disliked for being a marketer, and in the open source world is different than other industries, and that WordPress was much kinder and not all cutthroat, that you still know some drama in the community, but is still human. So talk to me about that. What's that experience been like for you, and why? Yeah.
So honestly, it sounds really weird, but I thought when I was going to my first couple of meetups, I was thinking they're not going to want me here because, you know, I'm marketing communications. They probably all know how to code apart from me, and they're going to think I'm selling them something when I'm not trying to. So that was my fear. And then I also just pictured, because I'm part of other tech and digital groups, and in the right circumstances, the recruiters are welcomed in. But if they try and sell too much, they're pushed away. And I thought, oh no, I'm going to be seen as the recruiter of my meetup. So I just wanted to. It just took me a little while to feel like, okay, they don't mind what I do. They're welcoming me in for who I am. They just want a friendly, smiley face to be part of their group. And that's the most important thing. And then I actually, I did compare it, going to WordCamps and things, to other tech events I'd been to. There was one tech event I went to where I think there was about 100 people there, and there was just one other woman. And I just didn't even think about it, unconsciously gravitated towards her and went and sat by her. And she burst out laughing. It was like, I just told this bloke that you'd come sit by me. Because she was like, that's just what happens. People gravitate towards where they sort of feel like similar or safe. And actually she ran a women in tech group in my local area. So that's how I got involved with that, because I'd had that personal experience.
That's exactly what happened with me and Angela. We were at a conference and then we just gravitated. We sat down between sessions and we just started chatting and we had this idea, but then it wasn't until Amy was...
Until I recreated it as my own. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were like, that's cool. We will follow you.
So why do you think it is that like open source and WordPress in particular has a softer and kinder environment than other tech fields?
I think because partly because people are willing to do stuff like contribute in certain ways and not necessarily be paid for it. It shows that there's a different long-term commitment. There's other reasons why you might want to make this community stronger and, you know, the technology better and put on WordCamps and things to make the connection stronger. You know, you probably have some other reasons for being involved than if it's not open source, where usually it's just money or, you know, someone's boss is telling them they need to be involved in a certain way. So I think that's the key difference in my perspective. But it also poses some challenges, I suppose, if you're thinking about marketing in the open source arena, because, you know, often people, well, it's like anyone who sells a WordPress website that they've created, you know, I think there's some sort of duty to wanting to say thank you for the tools that we're given. And so that's one of the reasons that people get involved, you know, contributing in different ways, whether it's to make WordPress teams or setting up a podcast where people from the community can chat together. So yeah, I think there's a bunch of different reasons why open source is a different environment, but kinder is a big one. And it's really odd because you'd never think you'd talk about a professional circle or set of circles as kind and think it mattered, but it matters a lot, actually.
So you bring up an interesting, so like the challenge of being open source and everything, but also I feel like WordCamp Europe has also a special challenge of that Europe is very diverse. There's lots of different countries there, lots of different cultures and lots of different backgrounds, especially that all that in attendance. What kind of extra considerations do you have to do with communication around this when you have so many different cultures, different languages, different customs all coming together in one?
Yeah, it is a real challenge, actually. But it's not one that we mostly struggle too much with because we try and make sure that the organizing team, it's a really big organizing team. So you're going to have so many of the countries represented, not all of them, obviously, that's ridiculous, but you know, there's going to be a really wide range of people from, and different like areas, even if you're not getting all of the countries, you're getting different areas. So you can quite honestly chat to people within the organizing team and say, you know, can you review this? You know, does this make sense in these terms? And one of the worries I had for 2019 about the comms team is I was trying to get as many native English speakers as I could without all being from the same place. So we ended up with, if we talk about where people were born, because most of them live in Europe now, but the US, two different places in the US, someone from New Zealand, someone who was born in the UK but lives in Spain, and then two people from the UK but from different parts of the UK. So, and then where they live now ranges, but including someone who lives in Berlin. So the idea there was, you know, make it easy for us in terms of having native English speakers, but try not to corner ourselves into being, you know, single-minded in our approach. But yeah, there is definitely, you know, a consideration you need for communicating messages to different cultures. And I think actually the year before in Belgrade, because I was in the PR team that year for WordCamp Europe, we did take extra measures to make sure that the sort of translation of questions from media to speaker or sponsor or organizer made sense in terms of the cultural reference for everyone. And that's because like cultures can be very different, and we wanted to make sure that we protected everyone involved. So being transparent to both sides, both the interviewer and the interviewee, to say, look, if there's anything that you're uncomfortable with, we'll stop the interview, we'll check, you know, everyone's on the right track, and we'll start again. And they probably did the same thing this year, but I was busy this year with other things. But yeah, so in terms of things like working with the media, you know, we put effort in to make sure that cultural differences didn't in any way impact negatively on what we were trying to achieve.
Wow, that's really a lot of work. And it's so, just daunting, the emotional aspect of trying to make sure you're covering all your bases for every situation. What about in terms of planning and organizing for an event that is happening in another country that you live in? What are the difficulties involved in that?
Well, we're lucky with WordCamp Europe that we always have a strong local team. So we rely on them to work out like logistics, but also in terms of the comms team, we'll be asking them either to prepare us some bullet points if they want to prepare an article, or review our work. So, you know, we're double and triple checking that what we are saying, if we're not from that country, is correct, or that city is correct. So sometimes, you know, you'll be doing research about somewhere you've never been, and then you're going to try and cross-reference it to make sure everyone's on the right track. But what we did for WordCamp Europe 2019 is we brought, actually, we found out who the host city was for 2020, which is Porto in Portugal. And we very quietly brought in the local team for 2020 and integrated them into different teams for 2019. So there was people in the PR team, the comms team, the sponsors team, the community team, so that they'd all get to grips with what happens in WordCamp Europe if they hadn't organized WordCamp Europe before, because it is different from a local WordCamp. It's always going to be, because of some of the things you've just mentioned, you know, there's so many other considerations, and you have to put in a lot of extra effort to make sure everyone feels welcome, and you're never going to get it all right. But as long as you learn and are transparent and honest, if you do make mistakes, then I think you're on the right track. But yes, so hopefully we'll benefit now from having our lovely local team for 2020 having been integrated into the organizing team towards the end of 2019.
I'm so impressed by everything that happens with the WordCamp Europe and, of course, your involvement with it. And I want to bring the conversation back around to you because I want to hear about you.
Okay.
I was reading about how you won the GoDaddy Pro Women in Tech Award. Like, what are some things that you're really proud of in your, career evolution, and things that you feel like you've personally accomplished and grown into aside from being this global lead for WCEU?
So that, what you just mentioned, the GoDaddy Pro Women in Tech Award, it was in partnership with Campaign Magazine, which is like a, I don't know if it's global, it might be, but it, certainly in the UK, it's like a popular sort of advertising and media magazine that's really successful, but online, you know, these days as well, mostly. So that was like a competition where you have to write a piece. I think you wrote two pieces, and and you wrote about yourself and why it would be important for you to win this kind of scholarship. And the prize, apart from stuff that I find really fun, like blogging for the GoDaddy site, was an all-expenses trip paid to Cannes Lions, which is the global creativity festival. And honestly, I couldn't believe it. So obviously it was a lot of fun, don't get me wrong, but it was also like mind-blowing that I was getting to go as a sort of a fairly young professional to this hugely C-level event where people were paying like thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds just to attend. That was crazy. But also it was lovely to meet some of the other winners. So I won the GoDaddy Pro scholarship, but there was other GoDaddy sponsored winners as well. And I can't remember the specifics, but there was a range of us. So they were other sort of ambitious women in tech. So that was awesome to sort of rub shoulders with them, get to know them, inspire one another, and also keep up to date with what they've been getting up to in the couple of years since. And then in terms of like other things that's made me proud, before actually getting into the WordPress community, I was editor for a couple of tech magazines, which I kind of feel like I stumbled into as an opportunity, but it's not one that I've taken lightly. I'm so proud. So I've got like a stack of magazines stowed away that are beautifully designed. But I should mention that I'm Welsh. So I live in the UK, but I live in England now, and I'm Welsh, and the the tech magazine was about innovation in Wales. So it meant that I would be on the phone talking to people from all over Wales, like leading innovations, like world leading innovations coming out of this small but like proud country. So that's something that I'll always look back on and feel super proud about. But again, you know, I sort of said I'm a young professional. I'm also proud that I've taken all the opportunities I've been given, partly because I'm kind of a now or never person. So I want to do it now. I'm not going to wait for it to come back around. I'll probably get distracted with something else. but I think I'm pleased that I've managed to do so much at a fairly young age, because that's kind of what my character is. So I think I'm proud to have stopped being scared that my skills weren't appreciated and everything we spoke about earlier.
So what is this something that you imagined what you would do when you grew up, or how does that compare?
Oh, that's really interesting. So when I was at high school, you have this show in the US as well. One of my teachers told me I'd be on The Apprentice. I was like, will I? But I'm not as fussed about sort of the idea of starting my own business. I much prefer to be using the skills I know I have to help, you know, in a wider team. I talked about teams earlier. I really like being in a team. There were some subtle hints when I was a bit younger that people thought I was going to do great. And actually, I'm the type of person that if I hear those, I'm thinking, okay, right, I'll sort it. I'll sort that. I'll sort that out. That's fine. So it's giving me a fuel to work forward and achieve more. One thing I always thought I would do when I was young, which I'm struggling with now, but doing, is public speaking. So I always, you know, I liked being on the stage and things as a youngster, but it is terrifying trying to do it now. So this is something that gradually, slowly by, you know, step by step, I'm improving, public speaking.
I really empathize with that. Last year, I did the keynote for WordCamp Denver. Ooh. And it just took it all out of me. I just had to go back to my hotel and cry. I mean, even though I got good feedback, it's still just like so much. And then this year I thought, well, I'm less off the hook. I'm just doing regular talk, but I'm doing an hour long at the beginning of the day. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's any less pressure. At least I'm not labeled keynote, you know?
Yeah. I've done a couple of workshops which are longer, but you have more breaks and there's less pressure. It's not being filmed. And then I've done a couple of lightning talks, which are stressful for totally other reasons, because you're looking at the time thinking, am I going to make it? I need to get it all out. So you're speaking way faster than you usually would. And then when getting announced for Global Lead for WordCamp Europe 2020, I had to get on the stage and was given a mic. I had to say, well, I was offered to say something. So I was like, right, I've got my one sentence I'm going to say. That's all I can manage right now because there's so many people in the audience. It's a lot of, for me, it takes a lot of emotional energy. So it's funny what you just said, Angela, about going back to your hotel room. And it's true that if you are nervous about it, and probably people who aren't even that nervous, there's such a buildup of like nervous energy. And you need that adrenaline to deliver, but at the same time, what goes up must come down. So there's a period after where, I'm sort of wandering around like really happy, but not really sure what's happening. And it definitely takes a little bit of time for me to come back down to earth and feel like, I don't know, back in the zone. But I love the feeling when I'm giving a talk or something, because I like that feeling of being on stage and delivering some information about something that someone could learn from. That's super cool. It's just the hour or day before where I forget why I'm doing it and I'm biting my nails and so nervous.
Well, I totally relate to that. I have done, you know, one talk, I've been on a couple of panels, but one actually of my own talk, and I was, you know, very stressful, and I got good feedback, but it was very stressful. I decided it wasn't worth it to do it for me anymore. I'd rather just go and volunteer. But it's funny because I used to be a teacher before this career, and I would talk in front of rooms full of kids all day long, and it never bothered me. But being in front of my peers is so different that
That's so interesting.
It stressed me out so much, I just can't do it.
I actually thought that I was sort of envious of all the ex-teachers, but like, it's kind of nice to know that it still comes with its challenges.
Well, it's different because, you know, when you're talking to kids, like, probably you know more than them, and, you know, they're not going to be walking around talking about you later because you're old and they don't care. But, you know, when you're giving a talk at something like this, and, you know, I always am just afraid there's somebody in the back saying, man, she's so stupid. She doesn't know anything. And so it was very stressful emotionally for me to do. But yeah.
Imposter syndrome for sure.
And I teach classes, you know, to WordPress classes, and I'm not nearly as nervous teaching my classes. I'm actually very confident and cool teacher. Like after I got my thing down, it took me a little while. I was nervous for the first couple years, but then that kind of eased up. But I agree, Amy, the public speaking part where you are on stage, you're having to entertain and inform, and it's a whole different expectation than delivering a lesson, which kind of it's different and it's much harder.
Well, and I think that I would do better doing talks for people that are not in this industry. You know, like I have looked into giving talks to different industries about their website presence and about growing that, versus talking to people that also are doing the same thing I do. I find very nerve-wracking, but I think I would be better off talking to people that don't do what I do.
I think that's probably true. Tess, have you done any other like public speaking? Have you spoken at any WordCamps?
I've done a couple of WordCamps. I also got to do something fun at WordCamp London in 2019, which was Josepha Hayden gave a fireside chat. And I was asked to be the sort of host of the fireside chat. So that was really nice because, like you say, I wasn't having to learn, I wasn't having to memorize my slides or even prepare anything really. I just had to be there asking a few questions and leading the conversation along. So that was really nice because it was a different setup. And I wasn't so nervous for that, but I can't quite trust whether that was just, I was just relaxed that day, who knows. Actually, the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done was not for a WordCamp, but in my spare time, I do something creative. So that ranges from writing a short piece of flash fiction or a short story to trying to delve into writing a longer script, which never really gets finished, creating a song, and recording to my best ability, some music. So I find I'm kind of kept sane and energized by creativity, being active and being social. So that fulfills my creative thing. Even though I'm being creative at work, I need to do it when no one's paying me, no one's asking me, and no one's necessarily going to see it as well. So the most nerve-wracking thing I ever did was read a piece of flash fiction I wrote. So that means it's about 1,000 words or less. It's a really short piece. And it got included in a charity anthology, which was by a group of writers here in the UK, in the southwest of England. And all the money was raised was to go to child refugees to give them safe passage across to the UK or wherever was safer than where they were. So I was at a literary festival and got the opportunity to read that out. And apparently, again, I delivered it great and everyone said it was really great. But inside I was thinking, this is the worst thing in the world because I've written these words. This isn't just me teaching someone something. This is part of me down on the piece of paper. So that was so nerve-wracking. I'm not sure I'll be ready to do that again anytime soon, but so, so proud. That's probably actually one of my proudest moments. And that doesn't feel like something to be proud of in terms of career, because like I say, the creative stuff sometimes is just a hobby for me. But the fact that I got to share it where I usually don't was nerve-wracking, but really gratifying.
Wow, that's like putting your heart out there, just waiting for someone to bomb on it. But wow, that's so amazing that you did it. And so it has been so amazing to talk to you today. And I want to thank you for joining us. And before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Oh, sure. So on Twitter, I'm at TessC_A. On Instagram, I'm at TessClaire. Claire is spelled C-L-A-R-E. The company I work for, you can find them on Twitter at minddoodle.com or minddoodle.com if you want to go to their website. And I have a personal blog as well, which is tessclaire.wordpress.com.
So fun to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I could have stayed chatting to you all evening.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter or join our Facebook group. We would be honored if you subscribe to the show. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Finally, if you want to be on the show or know someone who would, visit our website at womeninwp.com. Until next time.